Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I appreciate that. I hope you're off to a great start this new year, 2024. A lot of potential and a lot of things we can each do individually to just use our time wisely to accomplish many different things and to be a blessing to those around us. Those watching on Rumble, please like and follow. I really appreciate that. Subscribers, thank you so much. I appreciate you. We wouldn't be able to do any of this without you. Those that enjoy watching or listening to these episodes on the different platforms, I appreciate you doing that. Thank you for the good reviews and everything. But I'd also like you to consider going to agendaweekly.com and becoming a subscriber there, because it's so much more than just this episode each week. It's a news brief, it's prayer and action items, it's other resources and videos that we think will be a blessing to you to watch and to learn and to understand and share with others. So Agenda Weekly is a lot more than just this weekly episode, and we would appreciate if you'd consider supporting us. It's $5 a month. We made it as inexpensive as possible so no one would be detoured from doing it, because it was just too much money. But because of the low amount, we need a lot of subscribers to keep it going, so we'd appreciate you considering that. It's starting to pour down rain outside, so hopefully you won't be able to hear that, but we're thankful for the rain. This week, we are going to talk about an historic battle against evil that we are in. And I know you know that, but the leaders of the other side are a group we've labeled the globalists. That's who they are. They're Satan's useful idiots on this earth that are accomplishing his purposes to bring about world government, because he wants to be on the throne and worshiped by everyone like God. And so we know that's the way things are playing out from the Bible. But the globalists are the group that he has blessed with fame and fortune. He has given them that because he knew they would use it to accomplish his purposes. But a lot of times I think that group we label as, oh yeah, the Bill Gates and the George Soroses, yeah, they're evil people and stuff. But we don't think about them for who they really are. They are communists. And that's what today is all about. The globalists are communists. And stay with me so I can explain that, going through a lot of different things to help you understand that, because we have to understand the enemy if we are ever to defeat them, if we're ever to be secure from being deceived by their lies and different things they're doing to deceive and manipulate. So that's what we're going to talk about today. But thank you so much again for joining me. Covering one current story that came out this week before going on to the episode, January 6 facts. And Tucker interviewed a congressman who gave us some key facts I just want to tell you about in case you didn't watch it. We now know through congressional investigation, over 200 FBI agents were dressed as Trump supporters. Many were inside in Trump gear inside the Capitol before the protest even started. And for over 10 months before the rally, the FBI had infiltrated patriotic groups, and in posts we see them encouraging people to go inside and occupy to make our point. They said, this is going to be key. We have to go inside because it'll let them know we're really serious. And those first ideas to do that, we now know on all the social media posts, came from FBI agents. Total setup. Obviously, the media, Pelosi, William Barr, and all the others knew about this ahead of time. And that's why the narrative was instant. When something happens that's supposed to be unexpected, it takes a long time to figure out what happened. But when they already knew what the narrative was, the second it happened, you realize, oh, you planned this. Otherwise, you'd be asking questions like everybody else. Well, how do we know what happened here? Who were the key players? How come the films haven't been released? And on it goes. Anyway, I wanted to cover that in case you didn't hear that. And one thing Tucker said I want to answer, because he said this, he goes, why was Ashley Babbitt shot? And I said on Agenda Weekly 3 years ago, a couple days after January 6th, the reason she was shot is because in their narrative that they had planned, and now we know with over 200 agents that we know about, you had to have somebody die so they could say people died. It's just key, and they didn't know if other people were going to die or not, so I know they commanded that officer to shoot at anyone coming in. If you kill them, we will free you. You will not be guilty. And that's why he just haphazardly shot a defenseless woman who was just standing there with no weapons or anything. But they had to have a death. And that's, I'd like Tucker to know that. That's why they do that. The other side, when you study them, you realize they are preparing all the details. They're very organized, and they knew one person minimum has to die so we can say in those Trump rallies, people died. And that's what that was all about. In 1952, Whitaker Chambers wrote a book called Witness. And in that book, he said this: in the United States, the working class are Democrats, the middle class are Republicans, the upper class are communists. That's in 1950s America. He had been a Soviet agent, and then he'd gotten saved, and so then he stood against communism, and they destroyed him. But he said that, and that's a key piece of the puzzle that we have not accepted like we should. He understood from his vast study, his vast knowledge of the inside, being a communist leader in Washington, D.C., he knew the upper class in America, they are the communists. They are the ones pushing this agenda, and that's who the globalists are. And that's something he realized back in the 1950s, and I'm just here to tell you nothing has changed. That's who they are. They're not rearing up like a typical communist dictator for one simple reason in America. We're still armed, and that's why they're not doing that. So they'll do things subtly behind the scenes. Have a vaccine that kills off millions, have a fake pandemic, have different things, a September 11th attack that they do to get more control of the people. So they're seeking totalitarian communist control where they can execute and eliminate anyone who disagrees, but they're not ready for that yet in America. That's why it doesn't look like they're communists, but I'm telling you that they are. In Wikipedia, here's what it says communism is. Communism is a left-wing socio-political, philosophical, and economic ideology within the socialist movement whose goal is the creation of a communist society, a socio-economic order centered around common ownership of the means of production, distribution, and exchange that allocates products to everyone in the society based on need. Sounds so noble. A communist society would entail the absence of private property and social classes, and ultimately the elimination of money and the state. That's the lie that the Marxist, the globalist, have put forward is what communism is, because that's the only way you can sell it to the people. It's what they want you to believe it is, but in reality, if you look at it, here's what it is. It's a system where the upper class uses their influence and money to get psychopaths, and here's some of the psychopaths the elites have put up over the last 100 years, to get the control that they want to have and do what they are told to do. Castro, the New York Times put him in power by saying he was a modern-day George Washington, when they knew he was a vile communist dictator who would go on to slaughter thousands of his own people and rule with an iron fist. Lenin would never have been able to pull off the Bolshevik Revolution if the bankers of the world hadn't been funding him hundreds of millions of dollars. Stalin, it goes on. Xi, Mao, our government put him in power. The elites, the globalists. Che Guevara, Pol Pot, Ho Chi Minh, Tito in Yugoslavia, Nelson Mandela in South Africa, who was a ruthless communist. His wife, Winnie Mandela, used to take black people, put tires around their necks, fill it with diesel fuel, and light it, and just let them burn to death there. That was any black person that went against them and exposed them as communists. They're not the people that the media has told us that they are. Hugo Chavez and many others. I call them psychopaths because the communist system is the only system in the world that rewards whoever is the most evil with the highest position of power. Whoever's willing to kill even their friends or family to be in power, they will be in power. Stalin used to write about in his diaries how he loved gaining the trust of someone so much, a friend, that the friend would put his head upon his bosom, where then Stalin could take a dagger and twist it into his heart. That's a psychopath. And that's who these people have put in power. And all were put in power, propped up by America and the wealthy globalists. Then communism uses the psychopaths to confiscate all property and institute totalitarian measures to stop people from rebelling against the theft. That's all communism is. It's an idea that the elites came up with through Karl Marx. He was paid to write the Communist Manifesto by the bankers of his day, and that's what they do. Before they take over a country, they preach the Wikipedia definition that we heard. We're going to share everything, and everyone's going to get what they need. And we're not going to need any government at all. We're not going to need any private property because everyone owns everything. It's like the Great Reset. You'll own nothing and be happy, which means they own everything. It's not the abolition of private property. It's the confiscation of private property. That's all this thing is about. So they pushed the Wikipedia definition to the useful idiots to lessen the resistance to their totalitarian methods and destabilize the country. They always use the useful idiots of the college professors who they know are interested in any idea that sounds strange and new. So they pump their socialist ideas into them and their utopian ideas into them, let them stir up the young people to cause the chaos the communists love, and then they're able to come to power, and then they execute all of those college professors. Once communism is implemented and the citizens are subdued, the wealthy globalist elites come in and pillage all the resources, then forcefully harness the workforce into being slaves to enrich themselves. That's what communism is all about. That's all it is. The definitions in the dictionary are wrong. The elites, the globalists, the bankers of the world, they are all communists. The Rockefellers, they built China into what it is today because they wanted a dictator to enforce their totalitarian measures. That's why they're trying to put teeth behind the climate regulations and the health regulations, so they can have communistic control of every person on the planet. That is all the Great Reset is about. Klaus Schwab has a bust of Lenin, Vladimir Lenin, sitting on his desk. Why would he do that? Who would have a bust of a mass murderer on your desk? Only someone that admired that mass murder. Klaus Schwab is a communist. They are geniuses of becoming all things to all people. Read some of their documents and you'll see that. So they know the old hardline communist looking dictator isn't attractive to people. So they're going to do the same things, but they're going to do them under the guise of helping you. Well, these lockdowns are to help you. You have to be on house arrest, but it's to help you. You know, take this shot. It's going to help you. We have to force you to do that because it's what's best for you. We have to get that down. Henry Kissinger, who just died recently, he spent his life putting communists into power worldwide and propping them up. Why? Because he was a communist. A lot of people don't know that, but he actually joined the Communist Party when he was younger. And then didn't talk about that ever again because he realized, oh, in America, if I'm going to have the influence I want to have and the power and control, that might not be a wise thing to do. But he actually joined the Communist Party. Communism is the elite's vision for the world, and they will get there by any means necessary. So in summary, communism is a clever scheme to convince the poor and disenfranchised to fight to help the rich get richer. The utopia on earth talk is what mesmerizes the masses to totally commit to a plan that will make them slaves. It's just a genius idea to use other people to your advantage. There's a clip of an interview I want to play right now. This is from 2014. And it's very powerful because it's someone back then, 10 years ago, realizing health is what was going to be used to have lockdowns in America and to have total control. It was going to be, you know, one of their tools for control. And he saw it so clearly back there. I want to play this so you see this is nothing new. He understood in 2014, the Rockefellers, that was their plan, to use a health emergency to get more and more control of the world. And he's talking about in 2014, when there was that Ebola outbreak and how they scared us all into thinking it was coming to America and we're going to start locking things down. And I guess they did in New York City and stuff. But listen to this, because this, what he is saying 10 years ago is exactly what we just lived through. And he knew that's what was going to happen because they'd already laid it out in a plan. And we talked about that plan a year or so ago, the 2010 plan from the Rockefeller Foundation. But this is powerful when you go back and you see people warning about what is coming. And we should always be sober to listen carefully. But watch this clip.
The ruling establishment has a lot of, they will stop at nothing to complete their toolkit of control, right? So one of the things that has been missing from the toolkit of total control has been quarantines and curfews, right? Mm-hmm. So now, welcome to the new world in America, where to get on a bus, to go through a subway station, if you think that the procedures at the TSA are onerous, right? Guess this is coming to a bus depot near you. It's a more invasive way, and the ruling class needs this because, let me say, if the ruling class ever saw wide-scale civil unrest, you'd see an Ebola outbreak in America right away.
Okay, so this is, what you see is that Ebola is
another tool in the toolbox of the ruling
of
class
repression
control.
Yeah, to keep down
absolutely,
repression.
Positively, 100%. This is a tool.
Right.
Ebola doesn't just magically start spreading. Mm-hmm. And then we have these doctors that come back here. The white people, of course, live. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the two whites who got it or survived. All the black people that get it die. Right? It's very possible that one of these NGOs over there is going around with a veil of Ebola or spreading it from a small plane onto villages. The point is to get hundreds of thousands of people infected with it and create the next phase of control. Now, one of the things I'd like to show to back up my claims here. Here's a document from the Rockefeller Foundation. Rockefeller Foundation right there. You can zoom in on that where my finger is. It's called Scenarios for the Future International Development, the Rockefeller Foundation. All right? Okay. Let's take a look at what they're saying here. This is something like a 50, 60-page document. I'd like you to go to page 18 if you can look at this up on the internet, but I'll read it off to you. It's called lockstep, lockstep. And this is a phrase that I used right after 2001 when I saw the entire system of the United States, including the population, were in lockstep. So the Congress went along, and yes, it was Osama bin Laden, and the people waved their flag and said, I hate, and everything was in lockstep. Well, in 2010, they published this, Rockefeller Foundation, and here's what they're saying. They're saying that they call it a scenario. These are scenario narratives, and they speak about it in the past tense. So they put out this scenario, lockstep. A world of tighter, top-down government control and more authoritarian leadership with limited innovation and growing citizen pushback. Okay, I'll read a little bit of it. In 2012, the pandemic that the world had been anticipating for years, nobody was anticipating a pandemic, finally hit. Unlike 2009's H1N1, this new influenza strain originating from wild geese, they use some scenario, but this is Ebola they're talking about.
Ahead.
Even the most pandemic prepared nations were quickly overwhelmed when the virus streaked around the world, infecting nearly 20% of the global population and killing 8 million in just 7 months, the majority of them healthy young adults. The pandemic also had a deadly effect on economies. You can see the agenda, just naked, raw, naked control agenda written down, and it's anybody's guess how this becomes effectuated in real life. So whether this is written specifically as marching orders, or whether people take it upon themselves in the intelligence networks to say, okay, well, this has been produced, so this is the plan here. But these narratives have to be written in advance, because the intelligence agencies don't know how to do this, these narratives. They need help. So these think tanks, they come up with these, like Rand Corporation, Rockefeller Foundation. These are think tanks of death. They're not The think tanks, they're not there to find great ways to help people. Right? Okay, the pandemic also had a deadly effect on economics. International mobility of both people and goods screeched to a halt, right? Which is what they want. They want a completely isolated world, right? Debilitating industries like tourism and breaking global supply chains. Well, of course they want tourism stopped, because they're not in the tourism business, and they want you at home in your house in front of the TV. Then they got you, because once you watch the TV, they own your soul. Even locally, normally bustling shops and offices sat empty for months. Okay, so I love how they talk about it in the past tense in 2010. The pandemic blanketed the planet, though disproportionate numbers in Africa died, Southeast Asia, and Central America, where the virus spread like wildfire.
It sounds like the opening monologue of a disaster movie, right?
Exactly. Now listen, here's the good stuff now. But even in developed countries, containment was a challenge. Now here's this one. I love this one. The United States' initial policy of strongly discouraging, in quotation marks, strongly discouraging citizens from flying proved deadly in its leniency. So they should have been tougher, right? Accelerating the spread of the virus, not just within the United States, but across borders. However, a few countries did fare better. China, in particular. The Chinese government's quick imposition and enforcement of mandatory quarantine for all citizens, as well as its instant and near hermetic sealing off of all borders, saved millions of lives, stopping the spread of virus far earlier than in other countries. So the message is here is we have to look towards the Chinese, the oppressive totalitarian Chinese regime, as an example of what we need to be doing here. And of course, the ruling class here loves the Chinese regime, because they have demonstrated to the ruling class the most efficient form of capitalism, which is authoritarian capitalism. Even after the pandemic faded, this more authoritarian control and oversight of citizens and their activities stuck and even intensified. That's the whole point.
Anyway, I thought that was so interesting when I saw that this week, and very powerful. But right now, we're entering the final phase with the WHO treaty to take control of emergencies, which gives them the ability to take control of the world whenever they think there's an emergency. And they even said they might need to call an emergency for the climate crisis. And that's a key point I want to make, too. Right now, the communist system, the globalist, the actual communist, for total control, they are combining climate and health really into one movement. They used to be kind of separate, but with COVID, they realized, let's pull those things together, because there are two movements that are global. If you have a pandemic, it affects everyone. So no one country or one state can do whatever they want, because it'll affect us. If you allow the virus to spread, you're hurting all of us. It's hurting others. And so that's how they get that control, or rationalize that totalitarian control like we saw. And then the climate's the same thing. Well, you can't produce carbon dioxide because that's going to kill me. And so two global supposed causes, health and climate, they're coming together into one communist system of total control of everyone. That's how they're going to rationalize it. And anyone that doesn't go along to get along will be deleted out of the system, their bank account, their job, their electricity at their home, and everything else. But that's something we need to understand, so that we're awake and we're watching and we're looking for ways that are going to subtly push things that sound like they're for the benefit of everyone, but they're not. They're just another clever scheme for control. Now, some of you this week might have watched the Brett Weinstein interview with Tucker Carlson. And if you did, you need to keep watching this. That was a very significant interview. It's someone, again, a bright mind that has just awakened, and he's seen all the things we've been talking about for decades, but he's seen that, and it adds such validity to our cause when they, on their own, just because of what they've seen in the last couple of years, have awakened to realize, wait, something's going on globally here. Something's trying to get totalitarian control over us. And I thought it was so interesting from an unlikely person, but it was very powerful. And I'm just going to play a few clips of that because he said some very important things. We can't just let interesting things tickle our ears and then we go on and watch the next interview and the next interview and the next interview. That's one of the reasons we only do one agenda weekly a week. Because I'm like, if you give you 10 a week, you're going to lose and forget the other nine while you're watching the 10th one. We need to stop and meditate and think about and understand and make sure we are maximizing our understanding of each issue as it comes along. But that interview was so important. The first clip I want to play is him talking about what we learned about Big Pharma. What is Big Pharma? It's the globalist. It's all the elites of the world. They're the majority owners in those different companies that are pushing these medications and things to make a fortune off of us. And we already kind of knew that's all it was about. But again, I think it's interesting when someone new comes on the scene that's starting from ground zero. They haven't seen the film agenda, so he doesn't understand it's a 100-year plan. It's been going on for decades, and they've been gaining ground all the time. I wish he would see it. It would blow him away. But watch this clip.
What I've come to understand is something I call the game of pharma. If you think about what pharma is, we tend to imagine that it is an industry that is hell-bent on finding drugs that will make us healthier.
Yes.
That's not what it is. In fact, pharma is healthy when people are sick. And many people have noticed this, that of course it depends on ill health, so it has a perverse incentive. But what I think most of us did not realize is how elaborate its bag of tricks is and what the nature of that bag of tricks is. And to describe it, I would say pharma is an intellectual property racket. Or at least that's what it has become. That essentially pharma owns various things. It owns molecules, compounds, it owns technologies. And what it's looking for is a disease to which these things plausibly apply. And its profits go up to the extent that the disease is widespread, to the extent that the disease is serious, to the extent that competing drugs are unsafe or ineffective, to the extent that the government will mandate a drug, to the extent that the medical establishment will declare it the standard of care. All of these things.
You've just described pandemic response.
Well, that I did, and that's where I learned all of these tricks, was that basically every day of the year, pharma is engaged in portraying the properties that it owns as more useful than they are, safer than they are, and persuading the medical establishment, the journals, the societies, the hospitals, the government, to direct people towards drugs they wouldn't otherwise be taking.
He learned that Big Pharma is business. It's big business. All it is about is making money, nothing else. It's not there to help the people. It's not there to spread the truth. It's there to make money. And as the Judeo-Christian principles have been removed from our culture and the idea of fearing God and everything, then you know it's not only to make money, but if we can have a medication actually cause medical harm to the person, all the better, because then they'll need more medications from us and they'll need more of the things we have to offer. And that's what it's been about since the 1930s. When the Rockefellers started the American Cancer Society because they saw all their pharmaceutical medications were causing cancer, so they wanted to start that to act like, oh no, we're against cancer too. They weren't against cancer. They want as much cancer in the world as possible because they make millions of dollars off every single person that has it. And it helps accomplish their goal of eliminating the population down to a controllable 500 million people. So, again, we've known that stuff, but it's interesting to see someone just waking up to that.
I'm now going to put a hypothesis on the table about why things unfolded the way they did. and it involves that game of pharma. What was pharma thinking? Why was it so obsessed with making sure that we all took the so-called vaccines that were on offer? Why was it so obsessed with making sure that we didn't take the alternative repurposed drugs that so many doctors claimed were highly effective?
As treatments.
Right. Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, yes. These things were demonized and we were told not to take them, and we were mocked if we distrusted that advice. So the question is, what was all that? Why would that have happened? And again, this is not certain, but what I've pieced together is that pharma owned what was potentially the biggest pharmacological cash cow conceivable. The problem, however, is that the technology itself has a terrible safety flaw that, in my opinion, never would have gotten through even the most cursory safety tests. The body's response to seeing a cell of yours, which it recognizes as yours, that is producing an antigen, that is to say a protein that it doesn't recognize, is to assume that that cell is virally infected.
Yes.
And to destroy it. That is the only correct thing for the body to do when it encounters a cell of yours making foreign protein. Now, this transfection technology, the mRNA vaccine technology, as they called it, does exactly this. It tricks your cells into producing foreign antigens, which the immune system cannot help but recognize as an indicator of infection, and it destroys those cells. If these transfection agents circulate around the body, as we know they do, and get taken up haphazardly, then whatever tissue starts producing these foreign proteins is going to be attacked by your immune system.
So you definitely wouldn't want any of this getting near a person's heart or brain.
Definitely not. And very bad if it happens in your brain. It's particularly critical if it happens in your heart, because your heart has an incredibly low capacity for repair. Let's say you're a soccer player and you've been injected with this stuff, and a bolus of it has hit your heart and caused a bunch of your cells to be destroyed by your own immune system, by cytotoxic T cells and natural killer cells. Well, now you've got a wound. If you manage to survive to have it scar over, then that wound will be less of a vulnerability than it would otherwise be. But if in the period after you've been damaged, before your heart has fully scarred, you were to push yourself to some new athletic limit, now let's say you're in the middle of a particularly intense game, right? That would be exactly the time when a weakness in a vessel wall might cause a critical failure, and you could die on the field. So this was a very plausible mechanism to explain the pattern of sudden deaths that we have seen oftentimes in people who are unusually healthy and athletic.
Yes.
So to go back to the original story, pharma had a potentially tremendously lucrative property that it couldn't bring to market because a safety test would have revealed this unsolvable problem at its heart. And so what I'm wondering, my hypothesis, is that it recognized that the thing that would bypass that obstacle was an emergency that caused the public to demand a remedy to allow them to go back to work and to living their lives, that would cause the government to streamline the safety testing process so that it wouldn't spot these things. And indeed, one of the things that we see, in addition to a lot more harm in those safety tests than we were initially allowed to understand, but also the safety testing was radically truncated so that long-term harms were impossible to detect. So the hypothesis in question is pharma used an emergency to bypass an obstacle to bring an incredibly lucrative technology to normalize it in the public, in the regulatory apparatus, to sneak it by the things that would ordinarily prevent a dangerous technology like this one from being widely deployed.
The reason they forced the shot through the emergency use authorization is they realized that's the only time they'd ever be able to use it, because it was deadly. their trials had showed them that. And we know that now because of that declassified information. But so they were that evil, like, we're never going to get to use this incredible technology through a legitimate trial because it won't pass a long-term trial because it's not safe. So let's push this thing where we can use it and we can make hundreds of billions of dollars. And that's what they did.
I saw a credible estimate of something like 17 million deaths globally from this technology. So
17 million deaths from the COVID vax?
Well, when you scale up to billions, it's not hard to reach a number like that with a technology this dangerous. Now, to your deeper question, I think let's steel man.
So just for perspective, I mean, that's like the death toll of a global war.
Yes, absolutely. This is a great tragedy of history. So that proportion. And amazingly, there is no way in which it's over. I mean, we are still apparently recommending these things for healthy children. Never stood any chance of getting any benefit from them. Every chance of suffering harms that are not only serious, but tragic on the basis that children have long lives ahead of them. If you ruin a child's immune system in youth, they have to spend the rest of their presumably shortened life in that state. So never made any sense that we were giving this to kids in the first place. The fact that we're still doing it when the emergency, to the extent there even was one, is clearly over. And when there's never been any proper justification of administering it to healthy kids. It just, healthy kids don't die of COVID. And the shot doesn't prevent you from catching or transmitting it. So there was just literally no justification.
When they keep pushing something that everyone now sees is toxic, you realize, okay, the globalists, the elites, the tyrants only see us, the human population, as a tool to make money. That's it. If we can make money off them, great. If we can't, eliminate them. And that's exactly what communists believe. Humans have no intrinsic value. If they become no use to us, then kill them. That's what communists did. The day you can't utilize their labor, or the day they're standing against you in any way, just kill them. If they're not profiting us, get rid of them. That's the way people in America have been taught to think because of evolution and things. We're just animals anyway. The day your grandmother becomes unproductive, just give her a shot and let her go to sleep. She can't waste our resources. This is this communistic mindset of human beings being nothing more than a bunch of cells that can be utilized by those that are more powerful and have more influence. That's the world they've created for us. That's the mindset. They always talk about it's for the greater good, and that's the buzzwords they always use. Communists use that, liberals use that, but all these atrocities were for the greater good. That's how Bill Gates rationalizes everything he does. He doesn't see all the different people groups living in Africa as valuable human beings. He sees them as useless eaters. So if we can go test our medications on them, it'll be for the greater good. For those that matter, then we'll be able to go, okay, this thing works, this doesn't work and stuff. So to use them like guinea pigs, or the people in India, like he's done, and hundreds of thousands of little girls suffering in India. So that's the mindset. That is communistic. That's a Stalin. That's a Mao. If I have to starve to death 80 million of my own people, so be it. It's for the greater good. And they believe that Rockefeller in 1973, when he came back from China after he knew Mao had killed 80 million of his own people, he said whatever he had to do to create what he has been worth it. I'm just telling you, globalists are communists, so you have to look at them as that kind of threat. Look at them as that evil, that scheming. Because if you don't, you'll think, oh, well, I don't like them, but they're just kind of liberal in their thinking or whatever. No, it's far, far beyond that. What's really encouraging is what happened now, and very few people worldwide are taking the next boosters and the next boosters, but they are still pushing them, which shows how evil they are, even with all the data. But what's really positive is the little podcasts all over the world, Agenda Weekly and thousands of other ones like that, were in touch with more people than they thought, and they underestimated the influence of all the independent media that was speaking the truth and investigating what's going on, and it really upended their plans. And but now, because of that, that's what the World Health Organization treaty is all about. They realize now we have to silence all opposition if we are to succeed the next time we push forward a pandemic or some other emergency, whatever it might be, where we have the teeth of total control in what we're doing, but no one can speak against us. So a few key things here to understand, because this is coming. They're working this May to pass this through, and I don't think anyone in America will stand against it. And so the treaty will be signed, and we will pay for that dearly. So what is the treaty? It is total communist control of the entire world. Sovereign states, sovereign individuals don't mean anything at all. And they're wanting this power because they know that's the only way to finish building the cage of technology around us, and then being able to pull the lever and having it stick. Listen to this.
The World Health Organization and its signatory nations will be allowed to define a public health emergency on any basis, that having declared one, they will be entitled to mandate remedies. The remedies that are named include vaccines. Gene therapy technology is literally named in the set of things that the World Health Organization is going to reserve the right to mandate, that it will be in a position to require these things of citizens, that it will be in a position to dictate our ability to travel, in other words, passports that would be predicated on one having accepted these technologies are clearly being described. It would have the ability to forbid the use of other medications. So this looks like they're preparing for a rerun where they can just simply take ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine off the table. They also have reserved the ability to dictate how these measures are discussed, that censorship is described here as well, the right to dictate. Of course, misinformation is how they're going to describe it.
Something that shows the coordination and the effort in doing this and goes hand in glove with what the World Health Organization is doing is the Department of Homeland Security recently had a memo talking about three kinds of terrorism. And this is how they're going to silence us in America, even though we supposedly have God-given rights to free speech. But they, in the memo, talk about misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation. And those are all defined as acts of terrorism. And they define misinformation as errors, disinformation as intentional errors, and malinformation, this is pretty amazing, and this is what will silence us at Agenda Weekly and everybody else. Malinformation is when you speak the truth, but the result of the truth causes them to distrust the government. That is terrorism in the Department of Homeland Security memo. Malinformation, which they define as someone speaking truth, but truth that causes people to distrust the government. You can't make this stuff up. So pointing out their lies is an act of terrorism by definition, which means it eliminates all of our God-given rights. And that's the world we're in right now, and that is communism. That's why I want to bring that up. People are scared to use the word communism anymore. They talk about Marxism or liberal things going on. It's communism. It's going to make Stalin's empire look like a joke. What Mao is doing look like a joke. That's the world we're in. The globalists are communist. The totalitarian state is being built all around us, the invisible prison cell. And once all the elements like the CBDC and the WHO treaty and everything else is in place, they will have the great reveal. And they will teach all of us that think we are free, think we have a right to free speech, a lesson by throwing us in jail for an act of terror by speaking the truth. Brett Weinstein is a very brilliant man, you can tell that. He's not a Christian, so we need to be praying for him. But he doesn't understand the depth of what I'm talking about here with communism. He said very eloquently, the one problem this group has is that they are creating a world that's going to be hell, even for them. And he goes, so they obviously can't be that brilliant because they're setting up the conditions for hell on earth. And that's where I would disagree with him very kindly, because he was a great guy that's gotten a lot of it. But that's the whole point of communism, is to create hell on earth. So you will do as you were told. They know exactly what they are doing. Look what Stalin did. Look what Mao did. Look what Castro did. They again, it's not misguided idiots. It's geniuses that are so satanically evil. They want to create hell on this earth, and they want to be the lord of that hell, and they can make anyone that disagrees with them, anyone that comes against them, be tortured, be imprisoned, and suffer miserably. They love suffering and death just like their commander-in-chief does. He loves it. And that's the one thing he was off on if you watched the whole interview, and it was excellent. But he didn't see that. No. That's the whole point of this thing, is to create hell. They know exactly what they are doing. Yes, it's going to be slaughter and suffering and death, but that's the point of it. He talked about how, in his opinion, he goes, the West has collapsed. And that was a new revelation for him, which I love. As people are awakening right now, they're seeing what we've been talking about for 15 years. The West has collapsed. It's just this shell. It's this illusion. It's this memory, really, of what we were that keeps us going on the day-to-day, keeps us using this fiat currency that has no value whatsoever. It's just a memory of the past. And at some moment, the carpet will be pulled out and that will be gone. That dream will disappear, where we all realize, oh, the West has collapsed. The common man will recognize that. But I love that he saw that. But listen to his conclusion here of what's happened, because I think it's excellent. Again, for someone that's just seeing this world for the first time, he articulates it just in a great way.
I'm sad to report that I think the West has actually collapsed. And what we are left with is now a nebulous echo. The values of the West still function, but they function in a vague way, and we have seen that they can evaporate quickly under the right circumstances. I suspect, and I really don't know, I don't think anybody knows, but I suspect that some powerful set of forces has decided that consent of the governed is too dangerous to tolerate, and that it has begun to unhook it. And we do not know how this works. We can see some of the partners who are involved in this, but I don't think we know ultimately who's driving it or where they're going. I think many of the notions that we picked up about nations and who our friends are and who our enemies are they are now more misleading than they are informative. In other words, I don't think the U.S. has an enemy called China. I think there are elements within the U.S. that are partnered with elements within the Chinese Communist Party for practical reasons. And so the notion that these two parties are competing with each other just distracts us from what's actually taking place. But
I love that, how he is intelligent enough to see what most people on our side haven't seen yet. This thing's all connected in some way. And that's the deep state. That's the globalist, the elites. They're connected to all the countries of the world. The same person telling Biden and them what to do is telling Xi what to do, and telling Zelensky what to do, and telling Putin what to do. It's not like this, all the separate things. Yes, there's some rogue actors that do their own thing, but then they're eliminated. The globalists, the bankers, they could eliminate Russia or China or America overnight. If they weren't playing right, they would devalue their currency to zero and they would collapse and they could put a new dictator in. It's this game where everyone has a certain amount of liberty, the leaders of the world, to do some of the things they want, but they know the game plan. They know here's where we're going. Here's what we're doing. Again, that's why they hated Trump, because he was not in that. He wouldn't listen. Sometimes he maybe did things they liked and sometimes he didn't, but they don't like the uncertainty. They want to be 100% certain that it's a George W. Bush in there, or a George Bush Sr., or a Clinton, or an Obama, someone they know whenever they say, okay, too far, or come back, or push this through, they'll say, yes, sir, happy to do it. That's what they want. And this is the last clip I'm going to play. It's his call to meaningful action. I thought it was excellent. Again, for a man that's not a Christian, please pray for him. Put him on your prayer list. That God would, as his eyes are being opened to all the lies he's believed in his life, and pulling back the curtain, that he'll see Jesus Christ. He'll see the truth there and realize, oh, that's what I've been missing my whole life, for everything to make sense. But watch this clip.
Humanity is depending on everybody who has a position from which to see what is taking place, to grapple with what it might mean, to describe it so that the public understands where their interests are. It is depending on us to do what needs to be done if we're to have a chance of delivering a planet to our children and our grandchildren that is worthy of them, if we're going to deliver a system that allows them to live meaningful, healthy lives. We have to speak up. And I don't know how to get people to do that. I'm very hesitant to urge others to put themselves or their families in danger. And I know that everybody's circumstances are different. Some people are struggling just simply to feed a family and keep a roof over their heads. Those people obviously have a great deal less liberty with respect to standing up and saying what needs to be said. But this is really, it's what we call in game theory a collective action problem. If everybody responds to their personal well-being, if everybody says that's too dangerous to stand up, I'm not suicidal, I can't do it, then not enough people stand up to change the course of history. Whereas if people somehow put aside the obvious danger to their ability to earn and maybe to their lives of saying what needs to be said, then we greatly outnumber those we are pitted against. They are ferociously powerful. But I would also point out this interesting error. So I call the force that we're up against Goliath, just so I kind of remember what the battle is. Goliath made a terrible mistake, and it made it most egregiously during COVID, which is it took all of the competent people, took all of the courageous people, and it shoved them out of the institutions where they were hanging on. And it created, in so doing, the dream team. Created every player you could possibly want on your team to fight some historic battle against a terrible evil. All of those people are now at least somewhat awake. They've now been picked on by the same enemy. And yeah, all right, we're outgunned. It has a tremendous amount of power, but we've got all of the people who know how to think. So I hate to say it, or maybe I like to say it, but I don't think it's a slam dunk, but I like our odds.
God is definitely working, and I'm so grateful that he is. But he made such a good point. All the thinkers of the world are now on our side. All competent, courageous thinking people. And that's a great blessing. God allowed that to happen, and we should be grateful. And I think he could do something with that. We have the dream team, he said, and that's so true. All the Dr. Peter McCulloughs and people that were just doing medicine, and that's all they saw, were awakened during COVID to see a whole different world, where now they realize, oh my goodness, everything is not like we were told. And that's so important. An historic battle against evil is now underway and has been since the beginning, but we're seeing it escalating. They sprung the trap too soon. The censorship wasn't complete. The people hadn't been disarmed. Communication lines hadn't been fractured. And too many voices for freedom still had large audiences. I hope this was helpful in better understanding the enemy and the system they're trying to create and the different vehicles they're using to create it. Health and climate will be the key drivers from here on out because they're universal and they feel like they can take totalitarian control over anything that affects everyone, and they will keep preaching that line to us to get us to submit, but we must just say no thank you to all the things they're pushing forward. Our verse for this week is 2 Timothy 3:16-17, the same one from last week, again this week. All scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be perfect, thoroughly furnished unto all good works. We need to be using the Bible to instruct people, to correct, to reprove them, and so they can see the ultimate truth of who God is, why he came, what the price is to be paid for their sins, and they can choose to either pay that themselves one day when they stand before him and go to hell, or they can be free from those sins by accepting what Jesus Christ did when he shed his blood on the cross for them. I appreciate you so much. Hope you have a great week. And until next week, God bless you.